Now, stay tuned for Mrs. Green's World, a fun and informative green talk radio show that features guests from all over the country who talk about how living green can improve your lifestyle and be fun. Visit Mrs. Green's website, www.mrsgreensworld.com, for more information about her guests.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Saturday. This is Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790 KNST. We are live this wonderful Saturday where we have some cold front moving in here in Tucson, and I say that relatively. I want to apologize for not being here last week. I had a very good excuse. Mr. Green had a heart attack. And it's all good. It's all good. It was a series of miracles, and someday I'll blog about it, but he is actually quite well, quite healthy, and we were very blessed to be up in Greer, Arizona, and have him get help within 7 minutes. So as I said, I had a really good excuse for not being here. That being said, we have an interesting, informative, and really exciting, fun show today. Lee, if you are listening to this show, please call us back. I cut you off. We have Lee from Miraval Resort and Spa calling in, and I was talking to her before we were on, and I hope she calls back very quickly. We are going to paint bells with Mrs. Green today, right after the show, from 2 to 4 at 816 East University Boulevard. Get a chance to practice random acts of kindness with me. We'll have some cookies. You have to bring the milk, and I hope you are planning on joining us. We'll be there from about 2 to 4. And I don't know about you, but we had lots of plant damage in our house in Tucson. I've been reading about it around the country. We've had such severe weather shifts that it's just been unbelievable for everybody. So it's perfect for me to announce this. You know that I always talk about supporting the locally owned businesses, and that's what I'm supporting today. We have irreparable damage to our landscaping. So Tohono O'Toole has a spring plant sale, and they feature this plant, and I didn't know how to say it last year, but it's the redheaded beauty. I know how to say that. It's called a pensimon, or P-E-N-S-T-E-M-O-N. I don't know what the name of that is, but it's really, they have a patent pending on this hybrid for the desert climate, and it's a beautiful plant. It thrives in arid conditions, which will be caring about very soon, freezing temperatures as low as 13 degrees. So it does the range. And the sale is really awesome at Tohono O'Toole. And people say to me, where is Tohono O'Toole? Well, it's one of Tucson's hidden treasures. You go out to, it's like Ina and Oracle, it's Paseo del Norte. And at the sale, they'll have lots of native arid adapted and cold hardy cacti and shrubs and wildflowers, trees, herbs, vines, ground covers. And this is what I love the most, and this is why I say go to locally owned nurseries or whatever. You really need to have seasoned staff available to offer expert advice, and Tohono O'Toole does. The sustainable desert gardening, as well as recovery measures for homeowners that we can all take following our recent frost. We're supposed to get more. And the sale starts March 16th for the members, and then Saturday and Sunday, March 19th and 20th for the general public. So that's a really good thing to know. I really have a glitch in the matrix here. We're supposed to have a call in from Miraval. So Sarah, Lee, if you're listening, please call us back at 520-880-5678. And in the meantime, saving me is Sarah calling in from New York, Sarah Kaus. And she is my buddy from Swell Bottle. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, nice to be on your show. It's such an honor.
And I'm so happy to have you, because we are all Swell Bottle fans in Mrs. Green's World. So tell me, how is the weather in New York City?
You know, it's a little chilly. You were talking about having a frost, and I was smiling because I was thinking I'd like to have an Arizona frost. We've had such a winter here in New York, but hopefully the spring will be coming here soon. It's a little chilly today.
Yeah, well, we're having winter here, and everybody is so freaking out about it. It's like, you should see what happens when it goes below 60 in February in Arizona. It's pretty funny. Now, just, I spoke to you this morning, and we had a little glitch. I actually hung up from our guest from Miraval, so she's going to call back in a little bit. She's listening to the show. So, you know, here in Mrs. Green's World, it is what it is. We just go with the flow.
Sounds great.
Tell everybody what a Swell water bottle is.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and I'm glad you're all fans, and I'm glad Mrs. Green's World has been using the product, and you can attest to the quality of the Swell bottle. But the Swell bottle is sort of a technology plus fashion water bottle. So it's one of
perfect.
The best designed water bottles on the planet. But I have to say I'm a little biased since I was leading the design over the last year, but I think it looks pretty cool too. But what we did at Swell Bottle is we had a mission to try to reduce and or eliminate the amount of plastic single-use disposable bottles used. And we did a lot of research into our water supply and understanding the reason that people use plastic bottles. And we were somewhat stunned to see that, for the most part, the reason that people buy a plastic bottle of water on the go is not because they think it's more pure and more clean, and actually it's not. It's tap water. Oftentimes it's a lot worse for you, and we can discuss. But the reason they buy water on the go is for portability and convenience. So what we did is we turned our attention with the Swell bottle into thinking, how can we make it more convenient, more portable, and more fashionable to have a bottle of water on the go? And what we were able to do is come up with a bottle that's double-walled, stainless steel, and it keeps water cold for 24 hours, even in a hot car and, you know, hot desert conditions. But it also keeps your hot beverages, teas and hot chocolates and coffees during your chilly 60-degree winters there, keeps them warm for about 12 hours. So we were able to create a bottle, a portable experience, so consumers don't have to grab a plastic bottle on the go. They actually can pack it with them in the morning, and it's still surprisingly cold or warm whenever they go to enjoy that drink.
And here's what I want to say. I heard about it from people at Miraval, from Andrea at Miraval, and she connected us, and I ordered one. And I was very skeptical. I'm like, really? It stays cold? Because we live in Tucson, okay? And it's like 140 in the car sometimes here.
Mm-hmm.
So I ordered one. And I tested it, and it works. That is one of the things that blows me away. It stays cold, I would say, for about 10 to 12 hours in a very hot car. Is that what you have found? Is that what you claim?
That is what we have found. Now, if you leave it on your nightstand overnight with an ice cube, it'll still have an ice cube in the morning. But if you leave it in a hot car or if you leave it in a beach bag, it actually will get warm to the touch on the outside. It is stainless steel, but the inside will still be cold.
I know. I make people drink from it. I say, no, you have to taste this because I'm not making up. It feels warm on the outside, but just taste how cold it is. It really, I make people laugh. Now, what about this is one of the things I want to talk about. It's $40. And some people say, oh, $40. And I look at them and I say, really? How much did you spend on water bottles this month?
Right.
You're gonna have
that's
to spend
a very
next
good point.
Month and the next month and the next month. This is forever.
Well, one thing, Mrs. Green, is we did set up a coupon code for your listeners. So
you did?
We did. After I talked to you this morning, I set up a 30% off coupon code for your listeners. So if you enter Mrs. Green in all caps in the coupon code, you can save 30% over the next 2 weeks. But we have had some pushback on the $40 price point. But that being said, we're trying to position it, number one, as a luxury product. But this is somewhat controversial, but consumers seem to value a product that they have they've made a commitment to, that they've paid for. So not to charge more to convince people to use it, but when you leave the house and you have this highly coveted item, you'll be more likely to use it because it wasn't something that you received for free at the bank. It was something that you actually use, and as you say, you actually have your friends drink from. A lot of people do the same thing because they feel a real connection with that item.
That's right. And I told you that time would fly, and it always does because we're having fun. You'll definitely be back on the show. Give us two things. One is your website so that people can check it out.
Great. The website is swellbottle.com.
And it's swellbottle.com. And then
correct.
Please tell people they can vote for the color Mrs. Green. You're having a contest, and we want to win.
Right. We are having a contest. So the Swell bottle originally only came in one color. It was a blue. And we've just ordered 6 additional colors. And we're giving our fans on our Swell bottle Facebook page, which you can find through our website, we're giving our Facebook fans the ability to vote on a survey to pick the new name. times. And I have to say, Mrs. Green, your fans are voting like crazy. So Mrs. Green is currently in the top running for the green bottle.
Well, we want to nail this one. There's only like three more days. So
Right. The voting ends on Monday. So if you're listening to Mrs. Green and you're a fan, please please log on and vote for Mrs. Green, because we would be so happy to have you, the bottle named Mrs. Green.
I know. Shameless self-promotion. So we have to move on to our break. Sarah, thank you so much. We'll be tracking your success, your rising star. Thanks for what you do to the planet. Mrs.
Oh, thanks
Green,
for all you do, too.
Lee Weintraub up next from Miraval, sharing with us tips on good health. Please stay here with me.
790KMST.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790KNST. Thank you so much for joining us today. Action-packed show, starting with I already hung up on our first guest, which is just like, I think that's a first. It's Lee Weintraub. Lee, did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
From Miraval Resort and Spa. Welcome. Thank you for your patience. And the only number I didn't have to call back was yours, because we knew that was a no-brainer. And I just have to make one more quick announcement.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm pretty good at on the fly going with the flow, so I apologize for that. And, you know, as I say, it's all good. It's all good. So we are having a Who is the Greenest of Them All contest on our website, which is sponsored by a wonderful new sponsor, Well Home. And I hope you'll visit my website. And this is my pitch for it. Nominate your favorite greenie. I have to tell you that it feels so good, just vis-a-vis the being nominated for a color for a Swell water bottle. Do something nice for somebody that's in your life, that lives a sustainable lifestyle. Go to my website, Mrs. Green's World, and take the time to nominate him. The first entry we got was from a husband in New Jersey, in Bergen County, just saying the most wonderful things about his wife and how proud he is of her. So take the time to make a difference in somebody else's lives and vote and submit someone on our contest at Mrs. Green's World. We'd love to see it. And thanks for Well Home for sponsoring that. Now, Lee, we've got the whole rest of the time till the next break. So let's go. A little bit of background on you from Miraval is an incredible amount of stress, I would say, at a very young age. Your background is you were the nationally ranked junior tennis player, a full scholarship athlete for the Big Ten Championship for Northwestern tennis team, and you've played at the highest levels, literally, I think, of stress and of figuring out ways to be high-performing and yet live with the stress. What a perfect segue to go to Miraval and talk about some of the things you're doing there, but your credibility is instant with me.
Thank you for that. I started playing tennis when I was 5 years old, so sports and just sort of the routine of doing something where you're constantly practicing and needing to improve and needing to have a very hyper sense of awareness, lots of kinesthetic body awareness, was a huge part of my life. And after having worked with many athletes as a coach, I started to see so blaringly how sports are the perfect metaphor for life. So when I am working with someone at Miraval, I oftentimes use a lot of sports psychology or sports references to help people start addressing some of these stressors in their life in a way that's very proactive, very forward-moving. I do walk and talk therapy, walk and talk coaching, and a lot of tennis at Miraval as well, in which I literally get clients off the couch and get them unstuck and moving in their life, doing something that is sustainable and repeatable and helps them achieve goals. Sports are all about problem solving. So the skill of a great athlete is understanding how their body works, how their mind is thinking, so that they can make effective decisions and be great problem solvers. And that's very similar to life.
You know, just a little thing that just flashed in my mind. When I was parenting younger children and we would go for walks at night with my mom and dad and my husband and I and our kids, just the kids would talk the whole entire time,
mm-hmm.
because it was a focused time. It was out of the stress of the home. And there is some magic to that, taking a walk, being fully present. So do you find that people who might be resistant to opening up, it's not some people shut down when you say the word therapy.
Yes.
But if you're walking and talking, it's a wonderful like milieu to get people to open up? Is that what the philosophy is, the underpinnings of why you do it that way?
Absolutely. It is a much more organic, authentic, reduced self-conscious experience. You are in the present. You are feeling and seeing results. You're maximizing time, which oftentimes people do not have a lot of time. But right away, just by getting into motion and not forcing that eye contact, within the first couple of minutes, it's amazing how, you know, in one session of getting to know somebody, the walking really opens up a comfort tremendously.
Right, and people don't come to Miraval and stay for 2 or 3 weeks. I wish I could, actually.
It'd be nice.
But that would be really nice. So yeah. What do you give them in the session, which is in the scheme of things brief? What's their takeaway? What do you try to give them to take back to their very stress-filled, very high-performance lives that is going to help them on a go-forward basis? What's the takeaway?
That's a great question. And if I had to sort of reduce it to one major takeaway that Miraval really helps their guests capitalize on and tap into, is forgetting about feeling better in a quick fix, but getting better at feeling. So forgetting about feeling better, but getting better at feeling. So through the process of getting aware and mindful and uncovering some of the new information they'll learn at Miraval or different practitioners they'll meet with, they're able to really learn tools, whether they're mind, body, spirit, soul related. They are leaving with tools that are going to very effectively impart change.
So is a good example when I am driving somewhere and I am late and I am hyperventilating and I am starting to get a headache, instead of just keeping stop, feel it. I've done it lately. I feel it. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Is that the kind of thing you're talking about? This is something that you can
absolutely
put the stop sign on and say, okay, you're not even breathing. You're hyperventilating. So
absolutely.
That's what you mean.
Yes. Sort of calling yourself out on the moment where you start to spiral.
I know, and not just reach for a couple of aspirin or ibuprofen, because I've been able to stop it recently. So
yeah.
It's like, I love that.
The Miraval experience is so thorough from the minute you walk in to the minute you leave. Just such a supportive environment, a great learning experience, incredibly relaxing, but it really does bring in such deep levels of awareness while also teaching a lot of practical life-changing tools on how to really get better at feeling.
Right. And do you do, are your sessions, are they one-on-one or do you do, I know you do other things.
And I do one-on-one walking and walk and talk.
Right.
And then I have a lecture that I give called Reflect and Transcend, which is a very inspiring, lots of talk about goals, lots of use of sports types of metaphors. And then I also do two really fun tennis classes, Zenith Tennis and Rock and Roll Tennis, for all levels.
Well, tell us quickly about Zenith Tennis. We have a couple of minutes.
Zenith Tennis tends to be a bit more like chill. I have lots of Enya playing. So soothing music in which the three main focuses of the drill is improving self-awareness. So understanding what your body and your racket are doing at the moment that you touch the ball, because that's the most important moment. So lots of self-awareness. Secondly, trusting your swing, really letting yourself go all the way to your finish and seeing what the results are without judgment. And sort of the last biggest component of Zenith Tennis is there is no good or bad on the tennis court. There's merely lines, colors, a net, and a fence. And if you don't really love the result, making the effective adjustments to produce the result that you really want.
Now, honestly, when you say that you started at 5 years old, it like blows me away. My mind goes out of the box. Are you kidding me? So it's like, really, 5 years old, I don't even think I know which end of a tennis racket I could use. Were there interventions along the way from either your family or great coaches that helped you continue on in the path and manage it so that you, to me, sound like a healthy, well-rounded, you've done the work kind of person, still surviving being a child athlete?
I was extremely fortunate that I had very supportive, loving parents that knew how to walk the line between sort of motivating and encouraging me to continue to play and train without crossing the line into stressing me out and putting too much pressure on me. So I was very fortunate. And I met a coach along the way who I worked with. And I worked with this coach for 20 years every day for a couple hours. And he was a huge influence in my life and taught me a lot about myself as a person, how to be internally driven, and, again, how to make adjustments rather than harshly judge myself, which I think those things tend to parallel a lot of psychology and life lessons as well. And I was very lucky to be around very supportive, positive, reinforcing people.
You know, it's really interesting in this journey of Mrs. Green that people say to me, well, how does this relate to Green, or how does that relate to Green? And I say, there probably isn't anything that you could throw at me that doesn't relate to, if you want to use the word green, because to me, that is sustainability.
Yep.
It's body, mind, spirit. It's not just about, you know, the water you drink or the plastic bags you're using. It's about life in balance, which is one of my big attractions to Miraval, and how come I'm so proud to have them partnering along the way. And you're another example. Sustainability, if I can't keep healthy, where is the sustainability that I'm going to do for the planet?
Absolutely.
I think that's one of the messages. Now, quickly, we have 1 minute. Tell us about rock and roll tennis. What a great way
rock
to end
rock and roll tennis
segment.
Is a total blast. We rock out to music, fairly loud music. It's definitely the loudest area of Miraval. And just so much of tennis is expressing yourself and cutting loose, and people just have a blast, and they find that sense of flow state where they're basically going back to being a child again, and they're not self-conscious. They're just expressing themselves creatively, and it's a blast.
I love it. And yeah. One of my dear, dear friends, Susan, is a tennis player, and I'm telling you, we're planning on going to Miraval, so I will have to come watch you rock out at rock and roll tennis.
Watch me. You're coming to play.
Maybe not. I don't know. So this was Lee Weinraub.
Yes.
Coach Lee, News Talk 790 KNST, Miraval Resorts and Spas. Thanks for being with us. Every one of you listeners, stay here. You're not going to believe what's coming up next about a Facebook phenomenon.
790KNST.com.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790 KNST. We have with us in studio our buddy Scott from Legendary World. Legendaryworld.com is his website, so we don't forget to say it. And we're going to be talking about something so exciting to me, news about biofuel in the airline industry. I'm like, really? Really? So share the good news, Scott.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Green. It's good to be back in the studio. I was reading a little bit, and you know, you start hearing, but they've been testing biofuels. The U.S. Navy is actually using biofuels in their jets. But I just ran across an article a couple of weeks ago where Lufthansa is actually going to be the first airline that will be using biofuel on a test basis, but on commercial flights with passengers starting in 2011. They're actually going to, you know, it's gone to the point now where it's been approved and it's safe, and they're actually going to start using it to measure its effectiveness and efficiency actually in the commercial airline industry, actually using that.
Today, biofuel. Tomorrow, solar powered. There's always sun up above the clouds. Did you ever notice that?
No,
except
amazing.
For at night?
Yeah.
That would be so awesome.
And even the cruise lines have finally gotten into it. So they are, again, just starting the testing, but there are Royal Caribbean is actually using biofuel on two of its newest ships. Again, it's, I think it's a 1% biofuel, but again, at least they're starting to move that needle
it's
a little bit.
It's baby steps. It's moving it. And if it works for one, the other airlines will follow. And then the next thing we can work on and just take it on as a national campaign when there's a Mrs. Green app is I really read a lot about the waste on airplanes. And every time I get one of those plastic cups, there are millions of them consumed every day on a global scale. Think about it. All the passengers are getting a plastic cup and it's going in the garbage. So I haven't had the nerve yet to bring my own cup because it's cumbersome, but I think that's great. What are they actually going to use? Did the article say that?
No, and that's, well, the article did. I don't have it in front of me, but they're using multiple different ones. So there's, you know, Continental is actually, again, testing it on planes, but not in flights. So the kind of the big news, at least for me, was exciting was that Lufthansa is actually using it on commercial flights. To test it, mainly for the viability and the financial impact to see if it actually makes sense.
And wonderfully, the military, they're really trendsetters. They do a lot to save on things like this. Their R&D is huge, and they're always trying to figure out how to conserve costs. I've read quite a few articles on their efforts to conserve for very different reasons. So that's great.
No, biodiesel,
biofuel on airplanes. Let's see it in our lifetime. Scott Caddow, Legendary World. You can visit him at legendaryworld.com, and he is an eco-conscious traveler. So thanks for being on our show today, Scott.
Thank you.
And we will see you in a few minutes or an hour at Ben's Bells, because he's coming with his nieces, 816 East University Boulevard, practicing random acts of kindness. How awesome is that? So we have on the line, calling in from Illinois, but actually he is from Washington, D.C., Ian Moise, and this is one of the most intriguing guests that Mrs. Green has ever interviewed, and I'm going right out there on record saying that, Ian, no pressure. Thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Green. It's nice to be with you.
Okay, here's why, to me, it's such a phenomenon, because you literally, as far as I can tell from the research, you have a Facebook page called Reuse Connection, and it's RE and then the capital USE Connection, and being a Facebook fanatic for Mrs. Green, you have almost 60,000 followers. That blows me away. Tell us about what it is, how you thought it up, why you're doing it, and how did you get to 60,000 followers already? It's a fun it's a fun page.
Well, thank you very much. Let's see, I think you packed a few questions.
I did. So we can go one at a time. So give us a little bit about your background. How about that?
Sure. Well, actually, you said I'm from Washington, D.C., which is where I live, but I actually grew up in California.
There's the reason. It's in your blood. Right? It's in your blood.
It's in my blood. No, it is in my blood, actually, because my mother was quite the greenie from long ago. I mean, there were many like her, but it just wasn't mainstream. I mean, she helped start the first recycling center in Santa Monica, California, in the early 70s. So it certainly was in my blood, although my father was a little bit more middle of the road, so I also had a kind of a balanced upbringing.
Right,
I wasn't a tree hugger or anything like that. But what happened is I got into high school and college, and it just struck me especially I remember Christmas being a real kind of blow to me. Like, why was I getting all these gifts? And where were they going to end up? You know, in one year in particular, I just remember getting a watch, and someone mentioned to me that, why did you want another watch? And I was like, you're right. Why do I want that? So, that kind of stimulated my thinking. I just got interested in the waste stream and where it all goes. Tie that into kind of some international interest. After college, I traveled quite a bit around Europe, and then I was actually in the Peace Corps in Africa. And I spent, the last 15 years working in that. In the international development, and that exposed me to a lot of the differences between kind of rich and poor, and seeing a lot of the utilitarianism that you get in poor countries. And so the site actually ultimately is a connection between all these different countries where I've been in, and not to say that there are not poor people in the States or rich people in Africa or anywhere else, or that there are that everyone who's poor is like green-minded, eco-conscious, super sustainable. They certainly aren't, and there's a lot of very creative and brilliant people in the States and other wealthy countries. But just connecting these different realities and helping the idea is to kind of help where I come from see some of the value of where I've been.
Well, tell people that are not on Facebook what the site is about. I mean, explain what it is. It's a fun site. It's hard to do without a visual. If people are listening on their computers, they can go to Facebook and see Reuse Connection. But it's ingenious, some of the things that I see on there. And I actually post comments kind of frequently. It's a fun site. So tell people, explain it the best you can, the kind of things that are up there. To have 60,000 followers almost is no small task.
Sure. Well, I mean, the site is basically, and we have a website coming. Actually, we've been working on the website for 2 years. It started off with me and my father. My father's a software developer, so he's actually developing the site. It's been slow because we both have day jobs, but the ideas were all mine. And now we have a bunch of volunteers that are helping as well. But the real basic concept of the site is, someone in Poland, uses flip-flops to make a waste bin, and someone doesn't have that idea in Zimbabwe, and they go on the site and they see it and they think, I can make a business out of this. So it's really knowledge sharing about how to reuse materials. What happened, I had this idea 2 years ago, and my father started developing the website that I designed, but I was confronted with the fact that I needed a community, or I needed to kind of bring together the different people. I knew there were tons of people interested in reuse and recycle and reduce, the three R's, but needed to bring them together. So that's where I started learning about social networking and certainly found my home on Facebook, which has been very good to us. It's a great place to build this type of community. We post three posts a day. And tons of people are doing this stuff. I mean, we're not the reuse experts. I guess a lot of people think of us as the reuse experts, but we're not. It's actually all the people out there that are the reuse experts. And it's all the experiences around the world. You know, people in Russia see things differently than people in Japan, than people in Kansas, than people in Mexico, than people anywhere. So we all kind of have our different views of how materials are and how we can reuse them. And what we do is we just go out and find different reuses. And now the community is large enough that actually a lot of our fans actually post things that they do or that they see when they see a blog article. They say, hey, I thought about you guys today. So they post it, and we repost most or a lot of the things that our users post.
So it was literally, it was a viral spread, and it was your 15 years of traveling around the world that helped the connections. Was there a tipping point at which you looked at your Facebook page and you said, oh my gosh, it's really happening? Because you haven't been up that long, I mean, in the big scheme of things.
I started it in January of last year, so
yeah.
We certainly have grown fast. And a lot of people, as you can imagine, a lot of people ask that same question, like, how did you get so many followers? There wasn't really a tipping point. I mean, I think I've answered this question a number of different times, and I think there's maybe two or three things that I can point to. One is that there's a lot of people out there. You know, what I saw in the space of reuse and recycle and reduce is fragmentation, and I saw tons of people writing articles, and I wanted to find one place, or I wanted to build one space where they could all kind of come together. So that's the idea. And I think, you know, reuse is an interesting case in the sector because it's both broad and focused. So, you know, it talks about everything material, but at the same time, it's focused because it's not like an environmental blog like Tree Hugger or something like that, which talks about everything under the sun. I think with your last guest, you mentioned that green hits everything. Well, we focus on reuse, and we focus on materials. So we have that focus. It really brings people together for that. But then, of course, it's very broad because, of course, everything in the material world, you know, you can think about human beings and the relationship to the material world, and everything is inside.
Does anybody ever post, I haven't seen it that much, do people put help with this? I have all these things. Can you help me with what I can make out of it? And is there a community that responds to that with ideas? I mean, I want to talk about some of the specific things that you have on there so that our listeners can get a feel for it, because I have to tell you, it cracks me up, and it entertains me, and it excites me, and it's the creative uses that people put to what some might ostensibly call garbage or trash, and then it becomes something absolutely beautiful and functional. I mean, I think that's it. But is there a call for the community or the tribe, so to speak, to answer? You know, you for example, you have a fan on there that's made out of CDs. I'm like, really? Who thought that up?
Right. Yeah, as I said, you know, people think of things differently. They see things through different lenses. So it's just combining all those different viewpoints.
Okay.
We do actually, you know, in the first kind of, you know, last year, we posted a lot of people, you know, people ask questions all the time on our user page and say, what can I do with CDs? That's a common one. Or what can I do with plastic bags? Or how can I reuse this or that? And that's a big part of our site. Actually, the two questions on our website when we launch will be, what can I do with such and such? And then, you know, you put in like shoes, and it'll search our database, and it'll come up with all the reuses people have for shoes. Or you'll be able to ask, what can I reuse to make a cabinet? And people will say, you know, and then it'll come up with a search of our database for what people have reused to make cabinets, whether it's shelving or, you know, a bowling alley floor or whatever the case may be.
Right.
So that, you know, that a lot of people ask those questions. We did post a lot of them last year. What can I do with this? How can I reuse that? And the community would come up with tons of things, tons of examples. And it's still in our, you know, it's not as exciting or visual as these kind of cool creative reuses that you see. For example,
no
the
kidding.
Fan that you mentioned.
No kidding. And the M&M dress. We have to talk about those things. We have to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to be hearing more from Ian Moise, a Facebook social media phenomenon site called The Reuse Connection. And I've got lots more questions, and I'm sure he's got lots more answers. Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790 KNST. Please stay here with me.
News Talk 790 KNST.
Oh! Welcome back, everybody. This is Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790 KNST. Thank you so much for being with me today on this wonderful Saturday. We have had an action-packed show interviewing Lee from Miraval Resort and Spa, Sarah from Swell Bottle, and now Ian Moise, who I would call, I'm not giving you all the credit, Ian, but a Facebook phenomenon who started the Reuse Connection about a year ago, has almost 60,000 followers. Maybe after this show, you'll hit that magic number. And I just have a short announcement, Ian, if you'll bear with me. Our very good partner, we have a wonderful green magazine here called the New Southwest, and they are literally going green. They're taking their paper publication to an online publication starting with this issue. And you can visit them at www.thenewsouthwest.com. It's a stellar quality publication. Michaela and Jim, good luck with that. I think it's a really great move, and I know that newspapers in my life will probably become obsolete. So if you just tuned in, Ian started a website called The Reuse Connection, and its major purpose was to connect people from all over the world about what to do with their waste or how to reuse things that they had in creative and thoughtful and fun ways. Is that a good way to say it, Ian?
Yeah, and I would say also in profitable ways.
Profitable. Love it. Let's talk about profit. There's a very clear absence of the green message on your website, which I kind of love, even though I'm Mrs. Green's World. Was that intentional?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, the three R's are everyone who's green or who buys into sustainability think of the three R's. And so, you know, what we're trying to do here is build a global community. And the people that are already green and they see our concept, you know, they're basically already on our side, or we're on their side. We're all together. So, but for us, back to the website, is a lot more than just being green and finding cute ideas to, you know, to reuse things. It's actually about changing the whole industrial world. I know it's a little ambitious, but
no, it's not. It's a so it's more of a corporate mindset. The huge corporations.
It's corporate. You know, it goes. If you look at our mission statement, we target individuals. We target single entrepreneurs. We target small businesses. We target corporations. If you look at sustainability and what major corporations have done in terms of saving money by looking at their material stream, you know, corporations and manufacturers pay a lot of money in regulatory bills and also in waste cleanups, if you look at oil companies and so forth. And the idea to look at the material stream and not think that there's value just up until the time that the consumer buys the product, but actually look after that, you know, you get into the life cycle analysis of products. And when you actually do good life cycle analysis, and you as a manufacturer, whether you're a large industry or whether you're a single company or whether you're an individual, and you look at the end of the product cycle and you integrate that back into your production or your use cycle, then you actually end up saving a lot of money by reducing your, as I said, regulatory costs or another.
Well, one of the thing that now it doesn't really annoy me, but it's perplexing. I came kind of late to the green party, I admit it. I did a lot of things in my life that were sustainable because I, too, had a mother that was very conscious of waste, and we didn't waste food, we didn't waste tinfoil, we didn't waste wrapping paper. There was a lot of reusing around the Murphy household. But when I started to delve into this and do my homework and become more educated, going green, I think the mantra for a while was, well, it costs more. Well, you know what, folks? It really doesn't. There is so much savings to be realized in living a more sustainable lifestyle in terms of reducing, if you just want to go obvious, to your water bills, to your electric bills, all of your utility bills, to your consumption. You know, we had Sarah on, and people will spend $40 for a month's worth of water bottles, but they won't buy one that they're going to use forever. So there's a whole mindset shift, I think, that has to happen there that you're ahead of. You get that. For corporations, you can save so much money by being conscious about the reuse connection. Does that sum it up?
We hope so. You know, everyone, it's looking at the back end of the material stream. You know, there's value. We spent... Just, I love kind of bringing up this point, which during the industrial age, the whole industrial age, we spent probably billions, if not trillions, of dollars figuring out how to take metals and crude oil out of the ground and make them into products. Well, now all that stuff is above ground, and if we just spend a little bit on research and development of how to turn that stuff that's in landfills above ground into new products, it's amazing what we can do.
I totally get that. I mean, my friend Jason Tankersley, who's one of the sponsors of Mrs. Green, he sees landfills as treasure troves of possibility and things that we can just get out of them and extract and reuse them. So that's great. Now, I always have to ask this because I have someone like you on the show, what is one of the, you know, the weirdest or the funnest or the most out-of-the-box things that's come across your path since you launched Facebook?
Since we launched our Facebook page,
I wish you lost. Yeah,
exactly.
I think you launched your Facebook page. Sorry.
Right. Let's see. There's so many. I mean, we've posted 3 a day for over a year, so you know it's over 1,000 reuses. But I guess the one that I always kind of go back to is there's a designer. I think it's Oldenhaus, if I'm not mistaken, and they took old analog TV screens. And they made them into women's ladies' dress shoes, and they're really amazing, and they're beautiful, and of course you're like, how did an old TV screen get into a new shoe?
You are kidding me. You have
really
to tell me the name of that. What is the name of it, you think?
I think it's Olsenhaus, O-L-S-E-N-H-A-U-S, but if you look up vegan ladies' shoes, Olsenhaus, something like that.
Right. If you Google, you know, shoes made from television analog screens, you'll probably get something.
Yeah.
You are kidding. And were they high heels? Were they fashion forward, trendy, or were they awful?
No, I actually posted them on my site, and people, a lot of women were like, "Oh my God, I need." they're very fashionable. I mean, it's not just like, oh, throw some old, you know, paper bags on my feet. They're beautiful dress shoes, actually.
Right, I love it. Now, what about who decides what three you post and what kind of volume are you getting? How do you pick three to post up there a day?
Well, I'm in charge of the content for our Facebook page.
Okay.
I mentioned that some volunteers working with us, and one of them's in Bulgaria, and she's probably a little crazier than I am in terms of reuse, and she sends me a whole list of stuff. And I just go through and pick, you know, I try to mix it up. We have a lot of different people on the site. There's artists, there's gardeners, there's teachers, engineers, so, you know, a whole different groups of people, and I try to pick different things. I try to vary it a little bit. And I, of course, I try to get the inspiring and the amazing. You know, I mean, people look at the photos and they're like, wow, you know, that's what we want.
I couldn't. They're all, every single one of them is a conversation piece. So for the final question, where do you see this going? I mean, you're actively growing your Facebook presence, which to me is increasing the consciousness of all of this good stuff. You're developing a website. Is it your dream to monetize this in a way that it's sustainable for you? And how will you do that? I'm a capitalist, self-proclaimed capitalist.
Yeah, well, you know, if people, you know, I think the big sell on reuse is the fact that you can make money doing it for businesses, and you know, we're big on the individual entrepreneur, especially in, you know, rural communities or poor countries. So, for us, you know, we also think, I mean, we're a private company, and you know, we work during the day, so we don't need money right now. But of course, if I'm able to make money down the road doing this, I would love that. I would love to have this be my job. And we're, you know, just like a Facebook or something, our goal is to get a global website with all the people around the world that are interested in reuse or that are interested in manufacturing that look at us and inspire and get ideas and get ideas from everyone else who's on the site.
And so, what's your advice for anybody who's listening, including yours truly, to, I want to say the word authentically increase your Facebook community, because I feel as though it's a very powerful tool for mission-based organizations like Mrs. Green's World, like Reuse Connection, and many, many more. I mean, I get a lot of really good information from the Daily Green and Earth 911 and Center for Food Safety. There are many, many good ones out there. What's your advice? Just keep on plugging away?
Yeah, keep plugging away. You know, one of the things I chose early on, a lot of people recommended I write a blog, and that just wasn't me. And I focused more of my efforts and a lot of time on reaching out to people, and so finding people like yourself who are kind of somewhat mavens in the sector and have a following, and that you can share your, you know, that they can help spread your news. And I did it all over the world, you know, a lot of different countries. And I have people in different countries from having lived and worked in so many countries that help with that outreach. But, you know, it's...
Ian, we got to go. It was
okay.
Great, and I hope you get more followers. I hope I help put you over the 60,000 mark. Reuse connection. If you don't remember, contact Mrs. Green's World, News Talk 790 KNST. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back live next week.
You've been listening to Mrs. Green's World on News Talk 790 KNST, all about learning that going green can be fun. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and tune in next Saturday at noon for Mrs. Green's World on News Talk 790 KNST.